Everyone, welcome to Ending the Drought, a Buffalo Bills fan podcast. This is Season 2, Episode 27. I'm Jason Webster, and I'm here with your other hosts, Jake Cranston and Jeff Webster.
Jake, buddy.
What's up, fellas?
How do?
Doing good, man. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty of the draft here, huh?
Yes, beautiful spring day. Snowing like crazy son of a bitch.
Beautiful pile of shit.
Well, according to other people that live in Western New York, it's only snowing hard around our area.
Of course.
And it's sunny and not snowing up north. So
so it's just like usual how everything north of Boston is fine.
Yes. Pretty typical.
It's one or the other. We get hit hard or they get hit hard. Yeah. I guess it was our turn.
Yeah.
Most of the time it's our turn.
Yeah.
But you know, unfortunately.
The good part is it feels football, right? I mean, it feels football season.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Are we in November or April? You know,
like, right. All one and the same here in Western New York.
Yeah, it's getting old, but hey, guess that's what you signed up for when you moved to Springville, huh?
Yeah, man,
I guess so.
So, thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate that.
No worries.
Fucking idiot.
It's on me.
All right, so. Digging into this draft a little bit more, we're going to obviously have a really awesome guest on, Matt Perino.
Absolutely.
So we're excited to, you know, get his thoughts and see what he thinks about this draft and just kind of go over some stuff with him. But, I mean, all things are pointing to right now, in my opinion, again, most of these mock drafts, most of these, you know, analysts out there are looking at cornerback for us. So I think that it seems the consensus part of it. You're right over there, Jeff?
Not really.
Falling off your chair?
You ever see somebody mess with something that didn't need to be messed with and just watch calamity?
The clock.
It's all right. Okay. It's all right.
Oh, but yeah. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. So I don't know. What do you think? Are you looking at the draft as far as positional need for round one at cornerback, or are you starting to look otherwise?
Well, it's really weird. It's an awkward year because if you listen to Sean McDermott talk about the fact they have all the faith in the world in Dane Jackson, he came and played a very important role when Trey White went down. They're thrilled with Taron Johnson. Obviously, got a contract. I mean, they keep saying they have everything they need, but at the same time, it's hard to look at the team and go, they don't need a cornerback. They do. I think they really do, and whether they do that via the, you know, in the draft or free agency or trade or however they accomplish filling that position is obviously completely with them.
Mm-hmm.
And as most years we've talked about before, they have to wait to see how the draft board falls, right? Like who goes later than they should, or maybe the guy they really got their eye on goes sooner than they should, and they got to rethink what's happening at 25 where they pick. But yeah, you have to think, right? Like we've talked about wide receiver, cornerback. Again, there's a big buzz this year about a running back at that position.
Yep.
I firmly disagree with that idea, but
especially at number one.
Know. Yeah, yeah, at 25. And you know, maybe if they went backwards.
Yeah.
To the end of the first round or early in the second or something like that and had a two or three second, early third picks at that point. Yeah, maybe, but.
Yeah, I get it. Like all these, you know, I wouldn't say all these backs, but the last, what, two, three seasons, you have a running back sneak into the first round that maybe you weren't thinking should sneak in the first round. Like last year was ETN, you know, then they had, you know, the kid from Alabama. He was a first-round pick to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right.
You know, so you got some certain guys going into round one, but I don't know. I mean, I just can't see the Bills at 25 taking it back. I mean, the last couple of years we took, you know, Moss in the third round. We took Singletary in the third round.
Right.
So it doesn't seem that the Bills are really looking to draft a back in the first round at any point. I think it would have happened by now if they were looking to do that. Yeah,
they've had their opportunities, obviously. And the weird concept for me is, again, you're paying Josh Allen $258 million not to hand the ball off. Like, yes, you have to have a running game. There's no doubt about it. But I don't see them wasting, maybe not wasting, but spending the capital it would take to go and get a running back in the first round when it's not that critical of a position for him.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it because, I mean, the Bills are throwing the ball in their offense over 70% of the time, correct?
Yeah.
It's got to be in that area.
Right. And we're not talking about a generational running back at 25.
No.
That's not Saquon Barkley. I mean, and obviously he's had his issues with injuries. And right down the line, Travis Etienne was a big name last year. And then he spent the season on it, you know, IR. And that's the problem, you know. I mean, they're susceptible to extensive damage. And you can take a really decent draft pick at 25 and spend it other places, especially when there are needs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get that Singletary, his contract's going to be coming up here in the next couple seasons.
Right.
So, I mean, they may or may not look at drafting a back maybe later in the draft. Yeah. But first rounds just seems like a reach to me. I mean, you know, I know McDermott talked about wanting to get their running game, you know, correct this year. It was too sporadic last year, and kind of in his words is what he said.
Yep.
And they brought in the offensive line coach to do that. You know, they wanted to make sure their offensive run game was going to be more consistent, maybe take a little bit more pressure off Josh from running the ball this year. But
That's another conversation we've had, right? Like a good running game starts with a good offensive line. So a good offensive line can make a pretty good back look great. Devin Singletary had a pretty significant role in the second half of the season last year. Zach Moss took a seat, and he kind of, forgive the pun, ran with it. He did. Yeah. He did carry the load for the Bills, and I thought he did a really decent job.
Yeah, and I agree that, you know, the Bills, they don't need to not look at a running back in this draft. But I just don't think it needs to be anywhere near an early look at all.
Right, right.
It's just that, I mean, Singletary ended the year really good last year, really consistent. He proved that when we gave him some decent offensive linemen in there, he can make stuff happen. You know, he can catch out of the backfield. I'm not giving up completely on Moss. I think he's still a work in progress. I think he still has a lot to bring to the table. It's just
so far they haven't given up on him either.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's tough to tell what we're gonna do. You know, it's the NFL draft, right?
Right.
You know,
that's the fun part about what we're doing right now. Speculation is a great thing. I heard somebody, I don't even know who it was, I just heard part of a conversation on GR earlier. And the guy was saying this may be the first year he's ever not got a single pick right, like right from the top of the draft. There's a lot of differing opinions on the first overall pick even.
Yeah.
And we're picking 25.
Right.
So the odds of nail on that one are non-existent.
And we talked about that last week too, that this is one of those drafts where it's going to be a, you know, a balancing act between what do we need and what opportunities fall in our lap. You know, there's so few things that we desperately need that it gives us more opportunity to take advantage of what may be a unpredictable draft.
Right.
Other teams might suffer for that. We could benefit from it.
Yep.
Yeah, you could have a player fall right in your lap at 25.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough to say what Brandon Bean's going to do.
Well, for example, that Embedded show kind of showed how the draft can ebb and flow.
Yeah.
Where I don't remember who it was specifically. They were talking about moving up to get, but ended up staying pat and having that player fall to them anyway. So ultimately, they may have wasted a draft pick to move up to get somebody that eventually ended up available at their current pick without moving. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be a very fluid situation. And, it'll be neat to see.
I agree. I like the aggressiveness, too, you know.
Oh, me too.
That's one thing, especially at the state of our team right now. I would love to see Brandon Bean just be aggressive and go after it in this draft. I mean, that's
it's my a good opinion. Way to get your team hyped up too.
It know? Is.
Your fans would be so hyped if you do something crazy.
Yeah, the fans would be hyped. I mean, the players on your team would be super hyped up. It's just the aggressiveness that he's brought to this offseason.
Right.
I feel like it should translate into this draft.
And we talked about quality over quantity. They're not in a position where they're rebuilding and need to stockpile draft picks. They don't. They could walk away with three or four solid draft picks and be fine. Absolutely fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just when you look at this this roster, it's going to be hard to sign more than probably four or five draft picks, though.
Yeah,
just because for sure. Just because of the talent on this team and where are you going to put these guys?
Right, yeah.
You know? So it's to me, it's like right now, it's quality or quantity for sure. without a doubt. You know, I would 100% just go after, you know, somebody in the first round, move up to whatever I would have to get my guy if that's what it takes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it, you know, to me, it's like the first three rounds are the main importance of this.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know about, you know, we've talked about moving back to like, getting
again,
out of
it's
the
first
not round.
A quality, it's not a quantity situation where you'd want to get extra picks necessarily.
Yeah. I would be more apt to try to move up from 57.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
To get someone more quality, like almost like a first round guy that dropped. So,
yeah, I think we're about ready to bring on our guest, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He actually said, he just messaged me. He said, can you give me a few more minutes? I'm running behind. So around 6:55. So
cool.
We'll call him. Yeah. We got about another 9 minutes to go.
9 minutes. It's good for me.
Yeah. Oh, man. That means you guys are going to have to talk on the podcast.
We hate talking. It's terrible.
So much talking, you know?
Dude, so, you know, we talked a lot about the actual people and available possibly to the Bills at different picks last year. Or last week. And I'm really wondering, now it's a week later, we're basically a little over a week away, right? I mean, when this comes out Thursday, we're going to be a week away from draft day. Is that solidified at all for you? Like when it comes to cornerback that may be available at 25 or wide receiver or any other position, is there one that you think if he's available, they're going to go that way?
For a cornerback?
Or any position, really. But, like, is there anybody that stands out? Like, if this guy is there at 25, and I know there's a bunch that are going in the top. I'm not talking about top 10 guys. But I'm just saying, if there's guys that are drifting late in the teens and the early 20s right now, that if he dribbles back a few more spots, is there anybody you think that, like, is a lock?
Yeah.
At that position? I mean, we're just seeing Daniel Jeremiah's draft thing going live, and they put Jameson Williams to the Bills at 25.
Right, right.
I mean, that would have to be a no-brainer, right? Like, if he's there.
Yeah, he's a no-brainer for sure because, I mean, most mocks that I see, he's going top 15.
Right.
Pretty consistently. The other guy would be, my opinion, I really like, is Chris Olave.
Yeah.
It's tough to say where he's going to go. Most places I see him going right around 18, 19 in that area. So if he dropped to 25, I think that would be a huge no-brainer for Bean to go after.
As long as both those guys aren't there.
Yeah. You know, the other guys, it's tough to say. Like cornerback Andrew Booth Jr. has been a very popular pick for the Bills.
Right.
I think if he's there at 25, it'd be tough to pass up on him. You know, he brings a physicality to he would bring a physicality to our defense that I think we would really need at the corner position.
Yep.
Then, you know, if you're looking at another corner, you could kind of go a couple guys, right?
Yeah.
Kyler Gordon, you know, Elam possibly.
Yep.
There's going to be a few guys there. Wide receiver. Arguably, you could say maybe Jahan Dotson if he's there.
Yeah. I was playing around with a mock draft today in that Kenyon Green, you know, offensive lineman who's played all positions, was there.
Right.
And if there's no cornerback or wide receiver that really floats their boat, I mean, I wouldn't be crazy surprised if they went that way.
Offensive line?
Yeah. I mean, a guy like that with the versatility that they really, really desire.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, it could happen. They could see it all depends on how their board falls, too.
Right.
You know, they could have, again, it's all about who grades better at what position, too.
Correct.
So, you know, whatever they have their corners graded at compared to their wide receivers, compared to their, because they're going to draft a guard at some point in this draft.
Probably. Yep.
You know, I don't know where. Nobody knows where except, you know, being McDermott.
Right. And even they don't know for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until they get there, right?
But it, again, we could be, just like Steve Mathis said in our last podcast, it could come down to the situation, just like a Ed Oliver situation, where it could be BPA, man. Like,
right.
you just have the best talent available at 25. We, you know, it'd be hard to not take whoever's going to be there at 25.
Yeah.
Because there could typically be a really big talent pool at 25.
Right.
And it's just, whoever they grade the highest is who they would take.
Yeah, and it certainly wouldn't be the first time that people fell way further than they thought they would prior to the draft, right? Like, I mean, it happens. It seems like every year somebody drifts back way further than what anybody estimated they would.
So let me ask you a question while we got a few minutes left.
Yeah.
Is there anybody that you think is like, if they're available and we can move up and get them, they're a must-have? And what do you think we're willing to give up for them?
Poosh. I mean,
well, I know how you feel about Sauce, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, the cornerback from Cincinnati, Sauce Gardner, he would be a guy that I would like the Bills to move up to get if at all possible. Now, some people might call me crazy that you would have to give up, you know, this year's, you know, third, next year's first, and next year's fifth, basically, to do it. But to get a premier corner, I mean, he was an All-American. He returned 2 out of 4 interceptions for a touchdown this last year. The kid's measurables are right on par of what they should be.
Very athletic.
6'1", 190.
Yeah.
You know, he's
fast.
Runs a 4.4.
Yeah.
He has everything that you would want in a top 10 corner pick. But is it too much to give up to move up to get a guy like that?
Yeah, it's a good question.
You know, I don't know. I mean,
well, it's not like they haven't given up first round picks before.
Correct. I mean,
for Diggs, they saw value there.
Yeah.
They didn't hesitate to pull that trigger there. So, again, it's a quality thing, right?
It is.
And if this is all a smokescreen and they really know they're in a desperate spot where they need a high-end cornerback to compete for a Super Bowl this year, yeah, I don't know if there's too much they could spend that would be too much. You know, I mean, what would be too much?
Yeah.
To get a Super Bowl this year.
Right. And we don't know who that player could be. If it's a cornerback, we don't know who who it could be. Because it comes down to who they feel is going to fit in the Bills defensive scheme the best.
Right.
You know, what skill set are they going to bring to the Bills defense? And what are they going to be able to do for the defense right away? You know, what skill set do they have? And that's, you know, what really comes down to it. Because the Bills, you know, if you got a cornerback like Roger McCreary, for instance, I know there's a lot of people high on him. He's more graded a second round guy, but he doesn't play a lot of zone coverage. He was a lot of man to man.
Right.
So the Bills don't play a lot of man to man. They play a lot of zone coverage. They play
some, but not a lot. You're right.
So it just all depends on what the scheme fit is, what the athleticism is, what the character of the guy is.
Sure.
Right? So all that comes into play. You know, Sauce Gardner is a type of guy that has all the intangibles.
The versatility.
Does he have
too,
the character, right? though?
Yeah, you I know? Don't know. I mean, like you're saying, that's the big question, right? What do they consider that character that he carries? And again, just what you're saying, they have these traits in their head that they like, athleticism. But that's a good example of a position that you need a really good football IQ.
Yeah.
Like, you need to know the core, or at least have the capacity to learn a pretty complicated defense.
Yes.
They run somewhat of a hybrid system. It's not something probably a lot of these guys have seen before. And then you throw a couple of safeties in there like Poyer and Hyde that are constantly always in position but playing out of position.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a complicated freaking defense. So, it's got to be a guy who's – and we don't know if these guys or which one of these guys really maybe would score the best in the way the Bills rank their players.
Yeah. Yeah. And it all comes down to, you know, it's tough because a lot of this draft process, there's so many different steps for these guys to go through. It's not just watching tape. It's not just sending a scout to watch these guys during the year and coming back and showing tape, or it's not just the intangibles and the athleticism. Right. I mean, these guys, they sit down and their pre-draft interviews are a very big portion of deciding what guy they like too, because they get to know a guy too. You know, they get to know who the guy is, what they can bring personality wise to a team. All that matters to this team anyway. Right. You know,
well, I remember 2018 they flew out to I think it was Pegula's Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean flew out to see the family of Josh Allen.
Yeah.
They literally went to California and spent some time with him just to kind of get a better feel. And I think they came away with exactly knowing what they were going to do.
Yeah.
There was no doubt that was the guy at whatever they had to do to go get him.
True. Yeah. Let's take a quick break, Jay, and then we'll be right back to get Marino, Matt Marino, Matt Marino on the line.
We're going to get Brino.
Sounds good.
All right, we'll be back.
We are very excited to tell you about our new partnership with a great company right here in Springville, New York, Dilly Dally's Spices and Sauces. Owner-operator Dylan Wheeler started Dilly Dally's to find the most epic spice blends this world has to offer. And from that quest, he has collected a massive variety of gourmet and specialty products. We're talking 274 hot sauces, 147 barbecue sauces, and 125 barbecue rubs. They have spices, seasonings, drink mixes, even locally made cheeses from Cuba Cheese Shop and Yancey's Fancy. It doesn't matter whether you're a spice fiend looking for a new flavor for your hot wings or you just want to try a new Bloody Mary mix, you'll find it at Dilly Dally's. Trust us, you won't find a better variety anywhere else in Western New York. You can find Dilly Dally's at 53 East Main Street in Springville. Just look for the logo of the cool hot pepper with sunglasses on it. Tell Dylan that Ending the Drought podcast sent you and he will give you 10% off your order. He also has online ordering that ships products all over the state. His website is dillyspices.com. That's D-I-L-L-Y spices.com. All right, everyone, welcome back. We're here with Matt Perino. Hi, Matt.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, Matt. How Excellent. You doing? What's going on, Matt? Just glad to have you on today. We really appreciate it. Yeah, just to let everybody know out there, you're the Buffalo Bills beat reporter at Syracuse.com. You do the Shout podcast, which, by the way, Matt, is an awesome name for a podcast. When we started ours, we were trying to find different names, and Shout was one of mine that came up, and then I found yours, and I was like, ah, it's already taken. So,
yeah, when we were, when we launched the podcast, it was like Bills Talk with Matt Perino, and because we were just trying to get the podcast out there, we knew we couldn't use Bills long term, so we kind of workshopped it with some fans, and Shout was pretty popular, so we went with that, and yeah, it's we've settled into it.
It works. We
like it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. So I guess I'll dig right into it with you, Matt. So in the article that I read on Syracuse.com from your buddy Ryan Talbot, I really like Sauce Gardner myself, being, you know, he's 6'3", 190, runs a 4.4, first team All-American, and he was one of the nation's top corners. So what are the chances that the Bills move up and trade with the Giants to number 7 to get a guy like Gardner?
I mean, you might have to trade up even higher to get him, though, right? Yeah. Like that might be even be the problem. I mean, there's a lot of mock drafts that have him maybe going even 4, because I think any of those teams from 3 to 10 could start the run on cornerbacks, and it's not going to be a long run. It might even be only as long as 2 with Stingley and Sauce, but it's really intriguing because the Bills have 8 draft picks. They're not going to have 8 roster spots available. So the idea is get aggressive, use some capital, get up and get a guy that you think can come in here and be a difference maker and be a starter day one. Because after Gardner and Stingley, you have to start asking yourself some questions. Like, how do a lot of these different corners stylistically fit in, and are they day one starters? And I think for Brandon Bean to pull the trigger in the first round on a corner, he's going to have to believe without a doubt that that player is going to come in here and beat out Dane Jackson. Obviously, that's with the idea that Trey White's ready to go for the start of the season. But, I mean, anybody that knows Trey White and anybody that I've talked to around the Bills about him, you know, the expectation is starting to be that he'll be ready because he's just such a workaholic. It's almost like he won't allow himself not to be ready. And so – you figure that, you know, Jackson has started a number of games now, and he's played in some big moments, playoff moments. And so forever, whatever player you get, if you're going to take him in the first round, it better be a guy that can come in here and start. And I think that list probably ends at Stingley. I know a lot of people like Andrew Booth, and to be honest with you, everything that I've read outside of the injury stuff, I like as well. And maybe Brandon Bean and company think that he can come in here and be a day one starter. But I guess my point is, if you don't believe that 100%, maybe you're not willing to pull the trigger even at 25. And Booth now, if you know, I did a mock draft last week where, with all the noise about him potentially falling out of the first round, I had the Bills trading up in the second round to draft him and bring him out. And then it just becomes a little bit more, you know, the situation is more manageable. You take some of the expectation off of the player, and you go from there. But I think that the history shows that Brandon Bean, when he drafts a player in the first round, you know, he wants that player to be a starter right from the jump. And so that's the question you have to ask. And Trent McDuffie, who I love, by the way, really enjoyed my time with him at the Combine. I think he's going to be a really good player from everything I've read and everything that I've watched. But some experts think that he's probably a slot and long-term. And the Bills just paid Taron Johnson huge money. So, you know, a lot of things to consider, a lot of different things with the cornerback position that, you know, kind of getting through all of that is really important to kind of figure out who the Bills might zero in on.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, what corner, in your opinion, in this draft, do you think has the best skill set to fit the Bills' defensive scheme at this point?
Sauce Gardner.
Yeah.
I think he's the best player. And so I think that that's kind of like scheme. It's irrelevant what the scheme is, but it's interesting. I went back and I was talking about this on one of our recent shows, and I kind of broke down the Trey White NFL.com draft profile, because I think Lance Zierlein over at NFL.com does as good a job as anyone breaking down these prospects to give you a really good wide ranging scouting report. And the thing that he said about Trey White was that he projects in the NFL in any type of man scheme because of all of his ability to, you know, mirror receivers and his quickness and his twitch. And, well, all those things probably stuck out to Sean McDermott. We're like, well, he'll work great in our zone scheme. And maybe nobody was thinking about that. So there's so many, like, there's so many pieces of this that we just don't know, because the Bills could see, or any team could see, any little trait or any little thing on tape. And that could jump out at them and make them confident to fit that into what they do.
Yeah.
And so it's so hard to project all of this in terms of who will fit the best. Like, you know, I read a lot that Kyer Elam struggled as a tackler over the course of his career, better in 2021. And so that jumps on, like, okay, well, that probably eliminates him from the Bills' interest, because we know how Sean McDermott wants cornerbacks that are willing to tackle. But who knows? Maybe they broke down three games specifically where he was an elite tackler, and that's what they're judging on. They think getting him into their system can make him, upper echelon, like, physical corner. So,
right.
There's so many elements to all this. It's really hard to project it, but that's the fun of it.
Yeah, no, it is. And let's move on to the other side of the ball real quick. I'm a big fan of Chris Olave from Ohio State. 6'1", 187, runs a 4.38. He had 65 grabs last year for almost 1,000 yards. 13 touchdowns with Garrett Wilson on the other side of him. How does his game fit into what the Bills do on offense, if it's a guy we can get in this draft?
Yeah, I think everything that I've looked at with Olave is that he has versatility that I think the Bills would really like. Like, he's probably more of an outside receiver. Like, he could play on either side in any scheme, but, like, he did some work out of the slot at Ohio State. And if you watch his highlights, some of the suddenness to his game, I think the Bills would really like. And I think, you know, there's a lot of options and a lot of flavors right now in the roster in terms of slot receiver. I mean, you have Jamison Crowder, who has been a really good slot in this league for a while. You got Isaiah McKenzie, who's, you know, a matchup specific problem with his speed. And then in some instances, like we saw in the AFC divisional round game last year, Gabriel Davis can be a real weapon out of the slot. So yeah. I don't necessarily think that, you know, you need to go and prioritize that position, but I think Olave, with that kind of versatility and, like, just this smooth nature to his game, like, he sneaks up on you with the quickness after the ball's in his hands. Like, all of a sudden he makes a catch and 10 yards up the field and you're just like, wow, I didn't even feel like he ran that hard or pushed that hard. It's
right.
He's got a really nice style to his game that I think the Bills might – I just think it's another kind of flavor to what they could add to their offense.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's definitely something that when you're looking at either a cornerback or wide receiver, it's – you know, to me, and I've been, you know, talking about this on our podcast the last couple of weeks, cornerback to me seems like the most need for our team at this moment. But it's hard with this wide receiver, you know, talent, you know, not to look at wide receiver, especially if it's there to draft it, especially being, you know, our quarterback, Josh Allen. It's really tough. I liked Jameson Williams at first. Then I kind of geared towards, you know, Olave after that. So
Well, it seems weird, too. It seems that around where the Bills picking, it seems like in a lot of the mock drafts, there's more receivers circling that 25 than there are cornerbacks. And is the drop-off significant enough that, like you're saying, if you can't get a one of the top two, that maybe you do have availability to move up in the second round and get a guy that you think has value, which kind of opens up that spot at 25. I know some people are kicking the tires on running back. We both have always said that we don't think that's a good direction and a direction they will go. But what do you think about that group of Jahan Dotson and Treylon Burks and some of those guys that in all likelihood will at least a few of them be available at 25?
Yeah. You know, somebody that's sneaky in the conversation there too, maybe that people aren't talking enough about is Sky Moore, who I think
he's my guy. Like, yeah. We've talked about like him too a little bit. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And like, I really like Chris Trapasso's work over at CBS Sports, and he's been touting him for a while, and he actually has a first round grade on him.
Wow.
And who knows, maybe some other teams do have that. And he's like a true slot, true burning down the field weapon. The interesting thing about receiver for the Bills for me is I think we don't know what they have in Marquez Stevenson and Isaiah Hodgins. Like, those are two guys that have just kind of been, you know, obviously Stevenson much younger. Hodgins is entering his third season. And, you know, obviously with the Gabriel Davis, the seasons that he's had, it's been harder for Hodgins to break onto the field. But I'm interested to see, these are really important months now for those two guys, that maybe the Bills see something in either of those guys and there isn't as much of an urgency to add to the room. I mean, they still haven't signed a free agent wide receiver. They just brought back Jake Kumerow and they're basically rolling as is.
Right.
This is a deep wide receiver class though too. And it wouldn't surprise me if they, you know, maybe a John Mechie in the second or third round or a Calvin Murphy. There's tons of talented receivers in this draft. And there's also some talented running backs that I think maybe you don't have to splurge. Listen, guys, 25 is going to be, we know Brandon Bean's MO, and it's worked so far. I feel like he's got much more hits than he does strikeouts in the draft.
Oh, for sure.
And so I think they're going to go best player available at 25. And it wouldn't shock me if, like, hey, maybe a Jordan Davis hangs around and is still there, or a Wyatt, what's his name, another kid from Georgia, Devontae Wyatt, who is, some people think, is maybe the best defensive tackle in the draft. Well, you're sitting there, if you're a Bills fan, sitting saying, they just signed all these defensive tackles, they're not going to draft a defensive tackle in the first round. Well, maybe the value is there. I mean, listen, you sign free agents, you know, to fill holes in the roster. But if you think you have a guy that you can add to the mix and be a game-changing type player on a rookie contract, you jump at the opportunity to draft that guy. And I think it'll come down to just the grades that these guys have on the players.
What's your thought on that offensive lineman, Kenyon Green? Super versatile.
So it's funny. I think for me, it's a little too rich for my blood to go guard in the first round unless you think it's a bona fide starter. And I'm not talking about like Quentin Nelson caliber player. Like, I'm talking about, they're going to come in here day one and be a starter. And again, like we talked about a few minutes ago, I don't know anybody in this draft is necessarily that guy because of what the Bills already have in the roster. I think Ryan Bates did enough last season to, and the money that they're paying him now, for me to say that he's probably the starting right guard. And you bring up Roger Saffold, who is a Pro Bowler at left guard, and now you get your starting five. And listen, you're not drafting just for this season too. That's my point on the defensive tackle. So it wouldn't shock me. I just don't necessarily know the values there on a guard,
right?
Because Brandon Bean's done such good work in free agency on the line, and then drafting players and finding undrafted free agents have come in and done a really good job. I mean, Cody Ford's probably the biggest draft L that Brandon Bean has taken. But for that Cody Ford L, there's the Wyatt Teller hit. The only problem is they traded him because they didn't have any room for him.
Right.
And so, you know, if they can find their next version of Wyatt Teller and develop them, use Aaron Cromer a guy that's probably going to be on the staff for a couple of years to identify some talent, bring him in and develop that kind of guy in the mid to late rounds. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they go get a couple interior offensive linemen on day two and day three so that they can start developing those guys and create depth right away.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you think, I mean, based on what they have on the roster right now and running back, I mean, number one, do you think they're going to look to move Moss or keep him on the roster, or what's going on with him? And then do they look at drafting a back, you know, early in this draft?
So I don't know if anything's going to change for Zach Moss right now. I think that in a lot of ways, you know, the way things have gone for him reminds me a lot of how things have gone for AJ Epenesa. There's been little spurts. Much more for Epenesa than Moss. I mean, Moss is, he has definitely struggled, but I think he offers a brand of physicality that if the light goes on for him and he stays healthy, I still want to see him for an extended period alongside Devin Singletary. So we'll see. I'm not moving on from Zach Moss if I'm Brandon Bean at this age, but yeah, he's got some work to do. He's got some stuff to prove in terms of the draft. I think they want to add a guy that can kind of mimic what they probably envision for J.D. McKissic, because, or, you know, maybe they do want to get their next starting running back. Devin Singletary is going into the final year of his deal. If he comes in and has another big year, it's going to be pretty costly to bring him back. I shouldn't say costly. I mean, wide receivers aren't super expensive, but enough to the point where, you know, if you got to pay Devin Singletary $6, $7 million a year with all the other contracts you have to hand out, it might be easier to you know, allocate that money elsewhere. So, you know, I definitely think that they're going to address the position in the draft. But I don't think that necessarily means doom for Zach Moss right now. I think he's going to get an opportunity to get on the field this year. He's got to stay there.
Yeah. Yeah. Stay healthy. You know, another intriguing name for me that keeps popping up is the linebacker, Troy Anderson. Played, quarterback, running back, both sides of the ball. Pretty fast guy. What's your thoughts?
Oh, sorry, you broke up there. Who'd you say?
Oh, Troy Anderson, the linebacker.
I'm not familiar. As a matter of fact, linebacker is such an interesting position. I feel like I should do more work on that position. I've spent so much time on the receivers and the cornerbacks. But linebacker is intriguing because I do think that they like the depth they have. I think Andre Smith had a great preseason last year, and they have faith. If they have to lean on him in a depth spot where he's got to come in and play, they like him. They like Tyrell Dotson. AJ Klein still hasn't signed with anybody, so maybe he ends up returning to Buffalo on a reduced deal or a different deal.
Yeah, that'd be nice, actually. I like AJ Klein quite a bit.
Yeah, for sure. And so, but in terms of linebacker, like talking about value, I mean, there could be a real conversation to have at 25 or maybe even in the second round if like a N'Kobe Dean drops and you decide that you want to maybe try to maybe find a replacement for Tremaine Edmonds. If you're not going to, you know, extend him and sign him long-term, that contract's going to be super costly. So yeah, the linebacker discussion is an interesting one. I got to do a little bit more homework and then we'll talk after the draft.
Yeah. Well, it makes you wonder with Tremaine Edmonds, right? Like they didn't talk about extensions or anything with him. He's still just a kid. What are we talking about? 23 or something?
Yeah. 23. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're right. He's playing on his guaranteed contract this year. So, yeah, I mean, he's in a weird spot. I don't know. It's $12 million or whatever they're paying him this year because of the option year. But, yeah, I'm not sure what their thoughts are on the guy. I honestly don't know.
Well, I think, you know, all things being equal, if money wasn't a part of the conversation, they love him in the building. They love what he brings, his work ethic. For as much as he struggled at times, I get a sense that the coaching staff feels that very few people work and put as much time in as Edmonds. The problem is, you know, for what they're going to potentially have to pay him, the production has to, you know, there's got to be a spike there. I mean, he gets his tackles, but in big time moments, I feel like, you know, the defense last, you know, in the fourth quarter and in overtime against the Chiefs, where do you look? You look at the leaders. You look at the team captains. You look at the the guys that are supposed to be out there navigating the, you know, the traffic. And, you know, for the Chiefs to do what they did to the Bills, I mean, Tremaine Edmonds got to eat a lot of that, because that's what happens when you're the quarterback on defense, just like Josh Allen would get crushed if the offense wasn't getting it done. So, you know, that it's a big season coming up. And listen, this is still, like we mentioned, a 24-year-old kid that, who knows, or 23-year-old kid, whatever he is. This could be a monster season. And he's got more talent around him now going into year five than he's ever had on this defense, in my opinion. That defensive line in front of him is stacked. And so maybe this is the year where, hey, maybe the Bills want to be a little bit forward thinking and get a deal done with him ahead of time, because his price might go up if he comes out, has 140 tackles, six sacks, four interceptions. I mean, who knows what that season could look like if this defense is what it possibly could be, with, especially with Vaughn there now.
And going into, you know, this team being the most relevant it's been in over 20 years, I'm 40, and, you know, I was not 8, 9, 10 years old when, you know, the Bills were going to the Super Bowls era and stuff like that, and I was going to games and things like that. But, I mean, Matt, you grew up in the Buffalo area. You graduated from UB. I'm sure you've been a lifelong Bills fan. What does it mean to you and the Western New York community having the new stadium deal in place and securing the Bills for the next 30 years?
I mean, professionally speaking, I moved back to cover the team. So if they weren't here, that would be a bit of a problem. But yeah, like you mentioned, I mean, growing up here, my entire family are Bills fans on both sides, my side and my wife's side. Me personally, I don't experience the game really as a fan anymore. This is something that I think a lot of fans struggle to understand. But when you're in the locker room, when you cover the team 365 days a year as a job, the dynamic of it all changes. And to be honest with you, working in pro sports, period. I mean, even when I was in the UFC, like, you know, seeing behind the curtain, I guess, if you will, it changes the dynamic of things. It becomes very, the fan element comes out of it, because every time I'm around pro sports for the past 10 years, I've been working. Right. And so when people are on the edge of their seats for the Kansas City game, I'm writing three different versions of the story that I'm about to file right after the game. Sure. And so it changes everything for you. And people are like, oh no, I would never want to give up my being a fan to do that. And it's like, I get that. And at times, you know, if I let myself think about it, maybe I would be a little bit bummed, but the sacrifice that you make to stop being a fan, if you will, is to kind of be there to kind of give the joy to the fans in terms of the coverage, which I think was always the goal all along. But in terms of the stadium deal, it's great. I mean, listen, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money that the New York State, Erie County has to pay for this. But unfortunately, in an NFL world that's driven by money, you know, and the always looming potential of the Bills leaving, I almost feel like you got to pay to play type of thing. And I know that's a horrible way to look at it, but I think at the end of the day, what would you rather have? A deal that, you know, is really, let's be honest, wasn't that good for the fan, or no deal, no stadium, and the Bills move? I think if you polled everybody, most people would say, I'll take the bad deal if it keeps the Bills, because that's the identity of this city. And at the end of the day, listen, budgeted tax dollars are going to be what they're going to be. And maybe it's not as much money. Maybe it is what it is. But I think it's great for all parties just to be able to maybe go into this next era of Bills football for fans and not have that, you know, panic that I feel like the city has had for 20 years now about will they, won't they. They're definitely going to be here.
I agree. No, that's a great point. I like your take on being, you know, from the fan perspective to, you know, working, you know, for basically the Bills and in the sports industry. That's an awesome take. I really, you know, I appreciate your honesty on that one, because you're right. You know, coming from guys like us, we're fans first. You know, we do this podcast because we're fans and we love the Bills. We don't get to see, you know, the side that you're on. So it's a good perspective.
Yeah, well, and go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and even beyond that for us, there are times we'll all be sitting around and something exciting will happen and we'll want to talk about it. But at the same time, you kind of want that to be on the podcast to an extent, just so you can get that genuine initial reaction and discussion about the topic. And it's obviously a very small part compared to what you go through, but we kind of get it a little bit. You know, it's something that we have to temper our discussions based on what we're doing later for our podcast.
Yeah, and speaking for myself and probably these guys too, I would imagine, is that we truly take people like yourself for granted to a certain extent, because we certainly enjoy your work. We absolutely do. And we get a lot of information from people just like yourself. And you don't think about, like Jake said, that side of it where it comes with a cost. And part of it is that pandemonium that most people get to feel because they're not that close to the team. And yeah, it's really cool, man, that there are people like you that provide fans like us moments of information that help us enjoy the game more.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just say, like, I don't want to paint it like it's this big sacrifice, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah, right.
It's a sacrifice in the sense that, like, you know, I don't ever get to watch a game with my dad anymore. And growing right. up, because I'm in the press box, and, like, growing up, like, that's something that bonded my father and I for 30 years. And so when that dynamic changed, you know, it was tough, right? But
sure.
What I gained from it is just being at the center of that world all the time. And, yeah. you know, in the locker room, which, you know, during COVID, I obviously wasn't, nobody was, hopefully that's completely in the past. It looks like sure. locker rooms are opening back up, which is great. But I just think, I just wanted to say, I don't want to make it seem like, you know, it's this big sacrifice, because at the end of the day, millions of people, you know, would kill to have the job that I do.
I agree with that part.
Agree.
Yeah, I do agree.
And my wife always reminds me of that if I'm ever start complaining about anything. But, you know, it's just like anything else. Like, you do something, you know, and I explain that to people too. Like, there's so much that goes into it, like from the podcast to the coverage to the social media aspect of it, which is great. Like, I love it all. But like, my job is 24/7. Like, I never turn off the Bills. Like, right. even in Disney World with my family for a week, it was really tough to turn off the Bills. Like, when there was news, I felt like I had to retweet it, because I got 45,000 people that follow me for Bills stuff. And I feel like I'm letting them down if I'm not making sure that they're aware, at least aware of it, if not providing the coverage. So I worked my whole life, my whole adult life, since I was 24, 23 years old, to get to this position. And so I definitely don't take it for granted. I definitely value it. Worth the trade-off.
yeah, we value it also.
Yeah. Thanks for the unique perspective on things. You know, it's something that it feels a little bit behind the curtain. It's kind of cool just to hear, you know, the personal side of things from somebody who does this on the daily.
Yeah. Yeah, we appreciate it, Matt. We don't want to take up all your time. Obviously, we really appreciate you coming on. So if you want to just, obviously, you said you have over 40,000 followers, but if you want to give yourself a plug, let everybody know where they can find you on social media and that.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, guys. It was a great conversation. Love to come back on later this summer. We can chat a little bit more. I'm at Matt Perino on Twitter. That's probably the best place to find all of our stuff. The Shout Buffalo Football Podcast is live at least once a week, mostly three times a week during the season. We'll have a couple weeks where we have two or three. Definitely next week. Tune in every day after the draft. We'll have full coverage from the stadium back in Orchard Park, here from Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott after each night of the draft. So I'm excited, man. We're getting back to normal. Ramp up this coverage. It's going to be a fun week and a half here. And then before you know it, we had OTAs, mini camp, and training camp back at St. John Fisher. Yeah. If you guys are on the training camp at all, hit me up. We'll say hi.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect. And Matt, if you ever want to get you know, one of us on the field with you for a fan's perspective coverage, just let us know, all right?
I'll keep you in mind.
All right, Matt, we appreciate it. Well, have a good night, man.
All right, take care, guys.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. That was Matt Perino, everybody.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Great dude. Guy. Great guy, man.
He really is. I mean, he really is.
Looking forward to having him on. And you know, he did not impress.
No,
you know?
He did not disappoint one little iota. It was awesome.
Yeah. And we got to repeat our annual tradition of having two guests back to back right before the draft, which is kind of cool.
Yes. Yeah.
Get some unique perspectives from different people.
Yep. Yeah. And we'll try to secure someone for post draft to get their thoughts on how the draft went, just for sure. like we did last year.
Yep.
It's always good to get these guests on and get perspectives, man. That's kind of, again, that's why we do this podcast. We want to give you our fan perspective, but we also want to give you people like Matt Perino that has the professional, does it on a daily grind perspective. It's good to have. So
yeah, it's weird, like, that he knows these players, you know, probably by name to a certain extent. You know, it's awesome. He's just a good dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't really have an adversarial perspective on our podcast, which when we started this, we kind of wondered, like, should we have someone who thinks the opposite of us? So we kind of get that, like, play back and forth. But I think we've been really lucky that, you know, we bring on people during a time when everyone's in love with the Bills so much that nobody wants to argue about anything. Everyone's right. Ideas are great. They're all going to work out. You know, it's just happy every time.
It is. Sure. It's a good time to be a Bills fan. I can't say that enough. I mean, we've been waiting for this for a long, long time, guys. Right. So to have it finally here with the new stadium coming, you know, it's a good look.
Right.
To have right now. To be a Bills fan, it's great. So.
It's fantastic, man.
Great really for the city, great for the fans, you know, other than cost-wise, but whatever.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun. The sport itself and following the Bills has always been fun. Even when they were losing, I still enjoyed each and every game. But now it's weird that it's almost surreal that we're talking about a team that potentially could make it to this year's Super Bowl and possibly many more after that.
And probably could have made it to last year's pretty easily. You know? Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah. We were a good enough team.
You had to bring that up.
Yeah.
Well, it's not even, like I said, it's like, it's all happy here, right? So it's like, it's a positive thing that we had a team that definitely could have won that Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's always a good feeling to have a team at this stage, this caliber. It's awesome. I mean, you can't complain.
No.
It's a really good feeling to wake up every day and be like, man, I love Josh Allen, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. In a really weird way.
He's a big fella.
Right. Sorry.
Keep it clean. Let's go.
Sorry. All right, guys. Any other thoughts?
I'm good for now.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Awesome podcast, fellas.
Yep.
As always, Jay, want to tell everybody how to find us?
Yeah, you can find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ETD Buffalo. You can find our podcast on anchor.fm primarily, or you can find us on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, thanks everybody for listening. We're going to be coming out with our podcast on draft day next week. So look for our draft day podcast. We're going to come up with our mock draft. We're going to get some players available that we think are going to make the cut, so to speak. So
yeah, and then look, after the draft, we're kind of cooking something up as a little side project. We have a partnership with Dilly Dally's, which you've obviously heard in our commercials the past few weeks. And we're looking to do a little bit more with them. So, you know, it's not quite finalized, but it's definitely in the works. So coming soon.
Yeah, that's going to be fun, guys.
Yep.
All right. Well, we really appreciate everybody listening to Ending the Drought podcast, and just want to end it with, where else would you rather be than right here, right now? Go Bills.
Go Bills. Bills.